The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have Amin El Hassan coming on board. Amin, of course, former Suns executive with ESPN The Jump. And I hear him on SiriusXM. He does a great job. I want to talk to Amin about Last Dance now that it is over and what was left out. What were the highs? What were the lows? And also because, ladies and gentlemen, we are rounding the corner. Today is the 18th. Rounding the corner. Coming into the 10-year anniversary of your, not mine, your Phoenix Suns not having a playoff game. And Amin was there. And that is next week. It'll be the 10-year anniversary. How about that? Eric is with us. How's your weekend?
Not bad. Pretty low-key. Yeah. How about
you? Golf? Did you golf? Take the cart out?
I caddied. I still have this finger injury, but hopefully this will be the last week that I have to wear this little thing on my finger. So,
did you watch anything yesterday in terms of live sports? We had NASCAR. We had golf. Nothing.
I did not.
Neither one of those.
I didn't even know there was golf on, and I saw the NASCAR highlights, I think, on SportsCenter last night after the Last Dance, but I didn't watch it. So
I watched both, and so NASCAR, it was fine how they shot it because there's nobody in the stands. There was some interesting sides to it. It was a race. It was good to have a live sporting event. I was really caught up in the golf because they played at a course that you never see. It looked like you're in the middle of the desert, like not Phoenix. It looked like it was, I don't know, somewhere like Glamis, like in the dunes. But there was water. It was beautiful, but man, there was a lot of sand. And, you know, it's Ricky Fowler and Rory and Dustin Johnson and Matthew Wolf. Matthew Wolf has these really cool shoes on. I'm with my wife. We're watching it. She's like, oh, I love his shoes. And that's all she cared about. So he was selling product yesterday. And you could kind of hear Rory and Ricky talk some trash a little bit. Some of it felt forced. But, you know, by and large, it was kind of nice on a Sunday afternoon to not see something with the wings on it, meaning not shot in HD from 1987. It was kind of nice to not know what was going to transpire.
Brad, if I want – sports to me is like pizza. Like, I want the good pizza. No offense to Little Caesars, but I want to eat – the good pizza. So I'm going to wait until like the sports that I really care about come back and then I will indulge.
Not in Utah. Like, no pizza in Utah.
Not in Utah. Not in Utah. But we'll get into that because I've got a couple holes to poke in that story. So,
and it'll be pizza from Venezia's, which is
right.
So what'd you make out of Last Dance last night?
My two favorites of the 10, I think, were 9 and 10. The deep dive on Steve Kerr and his dad, I thought was amazing. And
Did you know that story?
I did. Yeah. I did, but I didn't remember it in detail, and I'm glad they addressed it. And I'm glad that they asked Steve if there was a connection with MJ because of that, or if they ever talked about that. As for the flu game that turned into the food poisoning game, here's my take on that. Okay. Michael Jordan has like 9 people that do things for him. Do you really think Michael Jordan got on the phone with this Salt Lake City pizza place and said, hi, I'm Michael Jordan, I need a pizza? And they're like, hey, we're making this pizza for Michael Jordan, so let's make it so he gets food poisoning? Because that's kind of what they inferred.
Yeah.
I just don't, like, you know, mega superstar athletes don't ever go by their names when they stay at hotels. Usually they have someone doing that for them. You know, they'll have a trainer or a media relations person. Hey, I need some food. Okay, I'll order it for you. I'll have it delivered to my room and I'll bring it to your room. It just seemed not unbelievable, but just like that's not how it works. Even back in the late 90s, that's not how it worked. So
you're caught up on that. You're going to take all this fun and then you're going to go through the last 5 weeks and you're going to poke a hole in a story like that.
And do you believe everything that they said in The Last Dance? I don't. I don't think 100% of what was said in this documentary is true. Most of it is, but I don't think all of it is.
Well, I think it's true from their point of view.
There you go.
You know, we got to address this. We got to address that. Like, I don't know. I felt like for the last 5 weeks, I very much looked forward to seeing all of it. And I didn't think last night was any, the revelation of him saying, yeah, we would have kept playing if we had just been back. That was really interesting to me. Sure.
Sure.
Do I think that Jerry Krause should have just been brutalized the entire all the way through from start to finish? No, I don't think Jerry Krause should have been brutalized, but I'm not there. You know, they had to do as we said off the first or second episode, you got to have a villain. So they had a villain from the very beginning. And there was not very much, hey, Jerry Krause actually did a pretty good job of getting this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And he's not there to defend himself. And Jerry Reinsdorf at the end just sounded like a sports owner. We could have done this and we could have done that. There was not a whole lot of fandom in Jerry Reinsdorf.
You know, no.
Just celebrating what they had done, it would have been nice to heard a little bit of emotion. But I will get into that with Amin in a little bit. On the other side, some college football. Could Arizona and Arizona State play twice in one season on the football field? I'll get into that next. So over the weekend, I was talking to some people in the college business space, and they brought up college football. And they said to me, and these are people that would know these sorts of things, what do you think about these preseason games or non-conference games like Sacramento State against Arizona State or Portland State against U of A or even Hawaii coming over here to open up with U of A in terms of cost and if they're not ready to go? And I said, well, I'd like to see the whole season played, but if they were cut back. And they said, so what would it look like if the in-state schools played each other in a home and home? What if U of A played ASU twice in the season to make up for one of those games? Because while those games are going to fund those athletic departments at Sacramento State and Portland State and even Hawaii, they're going to need those games. It just may not be possible for those games to be played this year. And so to get enough games in and from a national standpoint to have people say, okay, that conference in the Power Five, rather than playing Portland State, rather than playing Sacramento State, ASU played U of A twice, played once in Tempe and once in Tucson. Where are you at on this one?
Not against it. I mean, we've heard so many radical ideas that this really makes sense because it would cut down on costs. And for ASU and U of A, they wouldn't even need to take a plane. They could just get in a bus or even in vans if they wanted to socially distance and just make the 90-minute drive. I do think it would be very odd for ASU and U of A to play in early September, but everything in the sports world is odd. So go with the flow. And if that's, you know, it would be interesting to see what changes to Brad and game plans from the first time they played to the second time they played, because it's pretty much going to be the same rosters.
So look at it from this standpoint. If you were to open with ASU, U of A, and I've said this in the past, and ASU gets all mad at me about it. Guys, you guys wait around till Thanksgiving weekend and you play opposite Alabama and Auburn and nobody's watching your game. Okay, it all sounds great here in Arizona, but if you were to have, if you did play twice and you played once at the start and you played the game at the end of the year, you would have everybody so geeked up, jacked up across this state to have ASU U of A to start and ASU U of A to finish. You just would. And far more people would show up at sports. They won't be allowed at the stadiums, but there'd be far more people that would be jacked up to go to sports bars or have their watch parties. The interest in college football would go, in my opinion. Imagine USC, UCLA playing each other twice. Imagine the Apple Cup being played twice. It makes a lot of sense. Imagine if Alabama, Auburn took this trek. I mean, come on. So if we're getting to a point of, look, these smaller programs, God bless them, but they're going to go away probably. I heard where Akron eliminated football. You know, like, you don't want to see these programs crash and burn, but that's what's going on. And if they played a home and home, I know it sounds radical, but I don't see any downside to it at all. I really don't.
No, I don't either. And you know, we always look forward, Brad, in week one to those big heavyweight games. You know, this year it was going to be USC and Alabama. In the past, we've seen Oregon and Auburn. you would eliminate those games, but you would jump into, like, it'd be like rivalry week in week one.
In week one, yes. Yes, while it's not Oregon, Ohio State, Oregon State would make the trek down to Eugene or vice versa, the 30, 40-minute drive, and there you go. So that's something I'd very much like to see. One other note. So MLB, no spitting, no sunflower seeds. Players can't take a shower after the game. What else? No exchanging of lineup cards, no bat boys. So far, I'm fine with everything. I just don't know how you don't go about spitting. Like, you get over to first base. You've been doing this for 20 years. What are they going to do? They're going to throw you out of the game if you hawk one up? What if you got to hawk one up? I mean, from my understanding, the players are most upset about the showering or lack thereof. That's the one that's really got them ticked off.
And I think all those are pretty easy to follow when they're at the stadium, but it's what these players are doing when they're not at the stadium, which is going to be a much trickier task. So.
Yes, especially the younger ones just coming
up. Correct.
When we come back, Amin El-Hassan on Last Dance and the 10-year anniversary of your sons missing the playoffs next. And now, as promised, Amin El-Hassan joins us for a couple of minutes, of course, with The Jump at ESPN. You can hear him on Sirius XM. You can hear him across a lot of platforms. Former Suns front office executive as well. Amin, I appreciate you coming back on the show. How are you doing?
Not bad. Staying indoors and staying away from people, so that's always fun.
Yeah, you're working through it. All right, so you've been able to consume Last Dance. It is over with. It is done. It is finished. I want to go backwards on this. The low light of Last Dance for you, if anything, was what?
Ooh. I would start with a surprising dearth of footage from the actual 97-98 season. The whole thing 2.5-3 years ago when they announced, hey, they're going to do a Jordan 30 for 30, but it's going to be 10 episodes long. And we said, what? And they said, yes. There was an NBA entertainment crew that was following them that last year, and they have all these tapes of never released before footage, just a room full of these tapes, and they're going to have them all, and they're going to make 10 episodes out of it. And we were so excited, and we thought 2020 was so far away, it would never get here. And it gets in, I'm watching, and they're going back in time to like 88 and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, yeah, I'm with it. But get to the juicy stuff. And it just wasn't enough of that behind-the-scenes stuff that we had never seen. There was some, and the some that we saw was good. Let me be fair there. But just so sparingly used throughout the entirety of the 10 episodes.
Okay, the story that you look at and you say, no, that didn't happen. I know what happened behind the scenes on that story, that little side note that they had, that you looked at and you kind of shook your head and say, let me poke some holes in this one.
I'm not going to say I'll poke some holes, but that pizza story, well, I tell you, so that pizza story is not new. It's been out, I can't remember, someone wrote an article in ESPN, the magazine, where they talked to Tim Grover, this is like 6 or 7 years ago. And he came out with the pizza story. Oh, it was food poisoning. And all I say to you is this, and I'm a man of logic, and I'm a man of kind of things happen within a certain kind of pattern. Otherwise, what, you know, the randomness doesn't usually dive. And so I say to you, from what we know of Michael Jordan, and especially what we learned in the last 10 episodes, here's a man who was upset that George Karl didn't say hello in a restaurant. He was upset that B.J. Armstrong had the gall to celebrate a road playoff victory on his home floor. He was upset that LeBradford Smith simply had a good game. This man who gets upset at everything, who finds slights everywhere, is like, the pizza place in Utah, let bygones be bygones. And also, a pizza place that they ordered and said, yes, this pizza is from Michael Jordan. Right? Come on, guys. Like, this is elementary. This is not a good story. At least not within the context of intentional food poisoning, you know? And so that's the one where I'm like, I'm not. I didn't believe it in 2013 when I read that story. I don't believe it in 2020.
The person the player throughout all of this, that you felt like, other than Michael Jordan, they gave more than enough to and you learn something about that you didn't know?
Scotty. I work with Scotty Pippen. I didn't know the details of his home life in terms of a father and a brother, both in wheelchairs. I didn't know the depths of the poverty. I knew, he grew up hard up in Arkansas, but I didn't know the depths of the poverty. I knew about the growth spurt. I knew he was a walk-on. I didn't know he was the equipment manager, that he wasn't even on the team to start with. So, for someone that I work with, fairly frequently, I learned a lot about Scottie Pippen that I don't think I had known about before watching this.
Did you shed any tears over the last 5 weeks in watching this?
No, I'm not an emotional person, so tear shedding wasn't going to be on the agenda. But I did feel for Michael when he was talking about his father, losing his father. Obviously, the same thing listening to Steve Kerr and his mother talking about the death of Dr. Kerr. And again, Steve is a guy that I know and I've worked with and I know very well. And we've talked about the passing of his father, but, not to that level of depth and detail. And so, those moments certainly were emotional because, as I said, it's hard enough to lose a parent, and maybe many never get over it. But it's another thing when your parent dies a violent death. I mean, I think that's a different kind of pain. That most of us thankfully never have to go through.
Amina Hassan with us from ESPN. All right, so the player that you looked at when he'd pop up on the screen and just sent shivers up your spine because you're just not a fan of this player.
Well, that's, Brad, the funny thing about that is, over the years I've gotten to know many of the guys that were playing on teams that when I was growing up I did not like them. And the vast majority of them, through the serendipity of this business, I've gotten to know pretty well and ended up liking them tremendously because it turns out they're great people. People like Steve. I didn't like Steve Kerr when I was growing up. I didn't like Scottie Pippen. I didn't like Dan Marley. I didn't like Charles Barkley. These are all people I had an intense kind of dislike for and would find ways to be dismissive. And then you meet them and you get to know them and I'm like, oh, these guys are awesome. They're not just like good people. They're great people. So in terms of watching it, and there were certainly feelings that came up because you remember those moments. Oh, I got a name for you. Charles Smith. Never liked him. Still don't like him. Grew up a Knicks fan. I still blame him. Just go up and dunk the ball. So Charles Smith is the one that got me upset just seeing him on the screen.
Not Isaiah?
No, I know Isaiah. I worked for Isaiah Thomas in New York. And, I've known Isaiah Thomas, maybe a good 15-plus years or longer than that. And the other thing is Rick Mahorn I know very well. So the Detroit guys I'm pretty close with. And so, to me, I thought Isaiah has gotten the short end of the stick on many different levels in this story. Not the least of which, the thing I was just talking to my buddy George Sedano about this in L.A., Isaiah called those games in that last three-peat. He's the main color commentator. Yep. And I said, if I had been wronged, like Isaiah was wronged by the people who were out calling the game, I don't see any way that I could have been impartial or unbiased or even snark-free in calling those games. And Isaiah, ever the professional, was able to go out there and do his job and do his job well, not get caught up in that, which is something very easy to get caught up on, because we're not talking about, hey, they snubbed me or, they threw dirt on my name. You're talking about a guy who was left off of the greatest team of all time, a team that was created as a statement. These are the greatest players of all time. And he was left off it because a couple of individuals didn't like him from their competition days. I that's one of the guys that I really admire Isaiah's ability to kind of set that aside.
Okay, one last question on this one, and that is Jerry Krause. You have to have a villain, I think, to make things work. From the beginning, he was set up as the guy that was just fans loathed, didn't like. as social media progressed, I think it felt like it was between Krause and Isaiah Thomas that fans were on a lot of fronts. You've worked in a front office. What did you think about Jerry Krause and how he was portrayed in this?
Jerry Krause definitely deserves a portion of the blame because he let his ego get in the way of what the ultimate goal is, and the ultimate goal is success. When I worked in front office in Phoenix, if you told me, hey, Amin, if you sit in that corner and don't say a word every single day, we're going to win a championship, guess what? The only question I'd say is, do the checks still clear? I'm getting paid and we're going to win. I'll do whatever it takes. And Jerry Krause wanted credit. And I think one of the number one qualities of an effective front office is not giving a damn about the credit. It's just caring about the final result in terms of victory. And you know, when I worked for David Griffin and Steve Kerr, it was very easy to work without caring about who gets the credit because everybody had that mentality. We just wanted to win. The years after those two gentlemen left, it turned into credit palooza. I was told by superiors, you should seek credit. Why aren't you seeking credit? Like the idea that any act that I would do in the interest of the team shouldn't be in the interest of the team. It should be in the interest of me getting credit for it. And that was a very tough adjustment for me. Having said all that, every team and everyone who lives in locally here in Phoenix knows this or should know this by now. If your ownership is not rock solid, being a winner is a fluke, or if that. It's hard enough to win as is when everyone's pulling in the right direction. If you have ownership that is not rock solid, it is damn near impossible to sustain any kind of success. And so in the case of the Chicago Bulls, they had the greatest player of all time and maybe the greatest coach of all time, and they won a lot. But their demise came not because their general manager wanted credit, although that's a portion of it. The main reason is because you had ownership that messed everything up.
Okay, one last point on this then. You know, next week is a big day in Phoenix Suns history. Are you aware of this? What next week holds, I mean?
We're coming up on Memorial Day, so it's the 10th anniversary of the last playoff game ever played by the Phoenix Suns.
You win. And me being here, me leaving Southern California in the early 90s to come here to be a part of the Suns, to see it through the years, to sit here and say 10 years without even a freaking playoff game. I can't imagine a bigger rut for a franchise that is the gold standard in Phoenix. Put every other franchise to the curb. The Suns to miss the playoffs for 10 straight years. Would you have ever imagined, can you see them getting out of this anytime soon, or is it going to be a 15-year anniversary when we talk about it?
10 years ago to the day, I would have never imagined it. I thought for sure we were going to be like Utah or these places where the front office is there forever, the coach is there forever. I thought me, Steve, Alvin, David Griffin, all of us would just be together forever. And we'd win it, we'd break through at some point. And if we didn't, we would reconstitute and find a new way and a new plan. And I thought that's what was going to happen. 2 weeks, you know, by June 30th, which was the last day Griff and Steve worked for the Suns.
Yeah.
Yes, I could see a 10-year. Because everything immediately, it's funny, immediately fell apart in terms of process and decision making and how to run a basketball operation. Immediately deteriorated markedly from two of the smartest basketball minds to just a bunch of people making decisions willy-nilly. And as I said, focused on who gets the credit and who gets to fly to the Maui Classic 3 days before it starts just to get a couple days in Hawaii, and who's getting personal car service to pick them up from the team plane to the hotel, even though the bus is going the same route. All of these things, that's what the Phoenix Suns became when Steve Kerr and David Griffin left.
And throw Rick Welts in there too.
Welts, absolutely. Rick Welts is another huge loss. Although at least Rick retired on his own accord. He didn't quit because of you know, bad circumstances as Steve and Griff did.
Appreciate hearing your voice, and you do great work. Thanks for the time, Amin, as always.
Anytime.
There's Amin El-Haas in there with us for a few minutes with ESPN, The Jump. You can hear his work over on Sirius XM. Yeah, I should be pissed. You fans should be pissed. Everybody should not be happy with 10 years of this. It's completely unacceptable, and it's just kind of like, oh, well, we're going to unveil a new uniform. We'll get a new slogan. We got this player over here. And 10 years since even a freaking playoff game. Back with more after this timeout.
Our 2020 vision features roll on. I'm Eric Sorensen. Welcome back. And we are going to make our way out to the Southeast Valley today and talk to Isaiah Eastman from Higley High School, 3-year varsity performer for the Knights. During his time at Higley, he also ran track, played basketball. Isaiah, it's good to see you, man. How are you?
Good to see you. I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing really well. Thank you. So how have you been handling the pandemic since all this started back in early March?
It's been a little rough, a little boring, but, you know, I've just been working out, doing some school stuff here and there, just doing what I have to do to, you know, stay ready, stay in shape for college, things like that.
All right, we'll get to college in a minute because I want to explore where you're going, why you're going there, things like that. But take us through a normal day for you during the pandemic when you're quarantined, just from the time you get up until the time you go to bed, just to let our audience know what your sort of routine, for lack of a better term, was.
At the beginning of quarantine, I was waking up pretty late, but I started trying to wake up earlier, around like maybe 8:30, 9-ish, and then I'll go eat breakfast. Then I'll get a workout in, and I'll watch some film or whatever. Then I'll kind of just chill, lay around, just watch YouTube, watch Netflix, do whatever to pass time throughout the day. And yeah, it's kind of what I do all day. There's not really much I can do, like go outside and do too much. So
I saw you play once in person last year against Millennium, and you were playing running back. I know your previous two seasons at Higley, you were a wide receiver, and then you transitioned to play running back, and I know you only played half the season. You had over 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. Take us back through how you made that transition from wide receiver to running back and then eventually back to wide receiver at the end of last fall.
I used to actually play running back like more in my youth days too, so I kind of had that experience. But I feel like my athletic ability already kind of helped me transition from receiver to running back. I kind of had the vision and the cut ability to be able to make plays coming out of the backfield. I like to be in the open field and kind of just get the ball put in my hands already anyway and just make plays. So it wasn't too much of a struggle jumping from receiver to running back. I just had to learn more of the footwork of the running plays coming out of the backfield. That was just more the thing.
I know you said when we spoke earlier that you are not running track this year, but you have in the past. For those student athletes and classmates that had their spring sport canceled, whether it be baseball, track, softball, whatever, what would you tell to them? Because thankfully for you, you got to play all through your senior year of high school football. Those student athletes didn't have that same luxury. Have you talked to any of your friends about that?
Not really, but there is some people that I do know that, yeah, they ran track, but I haven't really talked to them about how they necessarily felt about it. I've seen some posts here and there about how like upsetting it was that they got their last sport canceled of their senior year, which is kind of tough and it makes me feel bad for them. But I mean, I say they just got to keep their head up, and if they want to continue pursuing that, whatever sport they were doing through college, then just keep working hard or whatever. But if that was it for them, then I don't have much to say, but it's just kind of a tough situation. And I just feel bad for all the people that did get their senior season canceled. It's just a rough situation all around.
Yeah, definitely super abrupt. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Jake Martinelli, who you know pretty well, during this quarantine, told me that he has been doing puzzles. That's been the thing that he has picked up. Bree Ferris, who I talked to last week, she's a cheerleader over at Sunrise Mountain. She has had three of her TikTok videos go viral, including one that's been seen over like 3 million times.
Yeah, I'm a little viral too.
Yeah. Oh, you did,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I got a little viral.
All right. Well, besides TikTok, have you picked up anything during the quarantine, whether it be cooking or ping pong or any extracurricular activity that you didn't do before you were stuck at home?
I didn't do it as much as I do now, but I'd say I like to play 2K a lot. I'm a 2K guy, yeah. So I've been playing like my career and different stuff like that in 2K. I definitely didn't play it as much as I do now because I didn't have as much free time on my hands. I wasn't like home as much. But now that I am, I play that a lot to get through my day.
Have you been playing with some of your Higley teammates?
I don't think anybody from Higley I've been playing with, but some other friends from other schools I have.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we got to circle back on this TikTok video. All right. Tell me about how it went viral and just how that all came down.
Well, I went go viral a minute ago, like not literally a minute, but like a while ago.
I got you.
I was with Coleman Owen. You might know him.
Coleman Owen.
Yeah. I was with him. And then my friend, he's also played on the Higley football team, Cannon Hall. And we just decided to, like, we wanted to do something that we thought would, like, blow up and help us go viral. So we were, like, in the kitchen doing a bunch of different stuff. And it just looked like I was, like, pouring a bunch of stuff into a bowl or whatever. But he was, like, really, like, under the table. So it looked, by the camera angle, it looked like I was, like, pouring the stuff into the bowl. But it was really, like, going all in his face. And it was, like, it's a bunch of different crazy stuff, like some sriracha, peanut butter, all different types of stuff. And so at the end of the video, like, he popped up towards the end and all the stuff was just all over his face. So it was just like a big mess all over his face. And I don't know, people ended up liking it and it got like 800,000 likes and like 4 million views.
Sweet. Well done. All right. Well, I mentioned Jake Martinelli earlier. You are not only going to be teammates with him next year at South Dakota School of Mines, he's also going to be your roommate. So you're going to be continuing your academic and football career there. Why was that the right fit for you, both academically and on the football side?
I just felt when I went up there that they kind of just brought me in and treated me like they just treated me so good. And my brother also goes, I don't know if you know that, but my brother also goes up to school there, and he's been going up there for 2 years. He's about to be a junior up there. And I definitely have been wanting to play with him for a long time. And I was told about the system that they're running up there. And I feel really comfortable with that system and how I could possibly be used in that system at both receiver and also running back. I just felt really comfortable up there. And then also, if football doesn't work out in the long run, it is one of the top schools to just get a great job coming out of and get a great degree coming out of, which I'll be going into business degree of technology is what it's called. They're just opening it up. And I think I could really get a good degree out of that. And if football doesn't work out in the long run, I could end up with a good job still with good paying money.
Wow. You got it all figured out. Good for you. That sounds like one heck of a plan. You mentioned your brother. How many siblings do you have?
I have six siblings, three brothers and three sisters.
All right, why don't you give us all their names in order of age from youngest to oldest? I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Youngest to oldest, okay. So the youngest one, Aronis Lipford, he is 4 years old. The next one, Kaya Lipford, 6 years old. The next one, Aaliyah Eastman, 12 years old. 13 years old.
Oh, okay. Hey, you caught yourself. It's good.
Yeah, 13. The next one is Jasmine Eastman. I think she's 14 years old. And then Braille Lipford is the next one. He is 18 years old, same age as me. And then my older brother, Adrian Eastman, who goes to South Dakota School of Mines, he is 20.
Nice job. You passed the test.
Yes, sir.
I'm giving you an A-. You only messed up once, but it's still pretty good. Last question. Get get me out of here on this. What are the plans for any sort of graduation? First off, I'm assuming there will be no prom at Higley. Are you guys going to try to plan something on the side? Prom.
I don't think that. I've heard of like a few little different things where they're trying to get like little groups together, maybe, or like some people are even doing their own little thing with just them and whoever they're going to bring to prom, like their parents will help set it up for them or whatever, and they'll do their own little thing. But as of, I don't think there's going to be like a big prom or anything like that.
How about graduation?
Graduation, we've already done. So we, a bunch of kids like went to the school, like pretty much everybody who goes to Higley High School went there. And they took like a little video of each person. They split it off into little groups and they took each group and had the person walk across the stage, each person walk across the stage one by one and like shake the hands. And they took videos of each person doing that or whatever and calling out the names. And I'm pretty sure they're going to put a whole video together of everybody doing that. And they're going to post it on graduation day. So it's like all the families can watch that video of their child walking across the stage. I mean, it's not the ideal way to do it, obviously, because your family wasn't there to watch you actually walk across the stage or anything like that. But yeah, that's how they did it. They just took a video of each person walking across and they're going to put it all together and release it on graduation day.
And like you said, not ideal, but not a horrible plan B either. Yeah. So. I think that turned out all right. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining me today. Good catching up. You got it. I know that you and I will probably be in touch this summer, and best of luck with everything and stay safe, okay?
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. You too.
That's Isaiah Eastman from Higley High. He is today's 2020 Vision guest.